Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Startopia Radio.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Startopia Radio, and it's going to be a good one. How's Stone?
Good afternoon, sir. It is going to be a fantastic segment. We have two gentlemen with us who are no strangers to the Business Radio X microphone. A little bit later in the program, we're going to get a chance to catch up with startup catalyst and entrepreneur in residence at ATDC, Mr. Peter Santora. But first up on Startopia this afternoon, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce the founder, the Grand Poobah, the Chief Moha of the Ignition Project and partner at the Angel Advisors. Please join me in welcoming to the program Mr. Jim Eckstein. How you doing, man?
Doing great. How y'all doing today?
Well, pretty well if I pronounced Eckstein right.
You did. It's awesome.
I'm the announcer in residence here at Business Radio X.
That's good. That's good.
So can you share a little bit about the Ignition Project? What are you igniting?
Sure. We're trying to get early stage entrepreneurs together with guys who've been there and done that before. And the idea there is if you have guys who've been there and done that before, they might be able to help these early stage guys get on down the road a little bit quicker.
So these are people who have exited a business of some kind?
Absolutely. Exited a business at least once and kind of been, you know, there's a lot of folks been around Atlanta, especially in the technology industry for 20, 25 years, now kind of laying back, going to the lake, going to the beach a lot. And they need something to do with their time. And this is a good way to put them to put them back to work.
So now it seems that lately, let's say over the last 3 to 5 years, that there has been people staying around after exits where that wasn't the case maybe 10, 15 years ago. Are you finding that?
Yeah, I see it a lot, actually. And I think it's because Atlanta looks like a place that might actually happen now, right? I mean, a lot of the time in the 90s, you had to go to California, New York, or Boston to find money to run your company. And usually you move there to run your company, right? Mm-hmm. If you can make these things happen in Atlanta, why not stay here? And again, we are close to the mountains. We're close to the beach. There's a lot of places, you know, play golf. Great place for guys to, you know, make a pot of gold and stay.
So now what is your project doing to keep them kind of engaged?
So twice a year what we do is we put together events and we try to bring in companies that we call early stage guys. They're not really startup guys. They're guys a little bit past it. One of the problems we got in Atlanta is we got a bunch of people focused on the startup market, right? Which is beautiful. It's actually not a problem, but it's beautiful that everybody focuses on the startup market. What happens, though, is 12 months later, nobody cares about those startups, right? And, you know, you guys run a business. It's tough to get a business up and off the ground and highly successful in 12 months, right? Mm-hmm. Even in 24 months, sometimes in 36 months, right? And so the idea is, what happens to all those guys? Do they die? Well, a lot of them actually do. And my sense is...
They get real jobs?
They get real jobs. Go home and say, hey, go get a job today, right? But no, the important part is somebody there to pick up the good companies. There's a lot of business that just takes a sales cycle of 12 or 18 months to get off the ground, right? Early stage capital doesn't have a lot of patience for, you know, 18-month, 24-month sales cycles, right? Doesn't mean you don't have a good business. Just means you don't got investors around for that long.
That are that patient.
That's exactly right. So maybe you get some guys who are interested in that kind of deal, you know, and you also get the company who've been through 18 to 24 months of knowledge already, right? So it's not the guy who's just come out of school and never done this before or
they
come out of business.
They have some scar tissue.
They got some scar tissue. You know, when you walk in the room, you say, that's painful. They say, yeah, it really hurts when that happens.
Don't do that.
Yeah, don't do that. That's really bad. So here, we're here to help you, right? And so the idea is to get these experienced people together with these folks who have kind of walked down the road a little bit and they're kind of not so interesting, you know, not so shiny anymore, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, what we've seen is you put those two companies together, you put those companies together with the entrepreneurs, at least, the wisdom and the capital, that these, you know, been there, done that guys before have can help these companies get off the ground and be successful.
So now are they taking that company and this kind of jump-starting it, or are they taking bits and pieces of this company and bits and pieces of this other company and making a mashup of something brand new?
Could do either or. What we've had the most success with so far is just taking the company itself and getting it going. Mm-hmm. And what you try to do is find entrepreneurs who've been there and done that and have some knowledge in the marketplace that the company plays in, right?
So you think that was the kind of the missing piece?
Yeah, sometimes it can be sales. Sometimes it can be a product guy. Sometimes it can be, you know, a finance guy or a capital guy. You know, a lot of these guys are just missing one or two pieces, and you bring them those pieces and, you know, some magic can happen.
So as a guy who has been asked to exit several companies, I have a couple of questions. One is, why should we care? And I don't mean to be condescending or flippant about it, but I get the sense that there is a broader reason and mission that it's good for all of us if we can do this for the ecosystem.
Oh, absolutely. I think this is this is economic development for the Southeast, right? I mean, if we can't provide a community, an ecosystem for companies to grow here out of Atlanta, what we're going to end up with is pretty much what we found ourselves with in the 90s and early 00s. You know, a lot of large corporations that people are dependent on for work, right? Very little innovation happening, by the way, right? The innovation doesn't come out of big companies. It comes out of smaller companies, right? So people like Georgia Tech, you know, people like Dave Cummins, people believe that what we need is more innovation in Atlanta to create more jobs. And I'm a big advocate of that, right? So if we can help these early stage companies get up off the road and get on down the road a little bit, more jobs, more innovation, greater opportunity for everybody, greater ecosystem for us all to live in, better economic community for us to live in. Right?
So the second part of my question is, what got you so fired up about it? Because, I mean, I also get the sense that you probably could have gone on about your own merry business and done just fine without it. But you personally really got fired up about this idea at some point. Can you share that with us?
Yeah, absolutely. It's weird. You know, I grew up kind of, you know, not so socially well off and not so economically well off. And suddenly found myself having sold my fourth business in 2004 and wondering what it all meant, quite honestly, you know. And I look back and I say, how does a guy like that get here, right? And I looked around and I found I had this toolbox of all this stuff that I kind of picked up along the way, you know, how to talk to people, how to sell stuff, how to build stuff, a little bit about technology, how to work with people, how to hire people. And I said, well, you know, I really don't feel like going and starting another business. You know, I got four kids at home and a wife. She didn't really like me working 60 hours a week anymore, right, especially if you got a, you know, you're doing okay. All right. So it occurred to me maybe I was given all this stuff for a reason and maybe I ought to go do something with it now that I got it. Right. And so I call that kind of a purpose. It's a call. You know, I'm a faithful guy. And I think really it's a call from my faith to come and say, look, we've given you all this. You've got this now. You know, you can sit on it and go golfing and fishing, which I would love to do. And I do. But I think we need to do something more, and I think we need to be able to give back. And I think, you know, when I was building my businesses in the 90s and the early 00s, there were a lot of folks who reached out and gave me a helping hand. And we need a lot more of those folks today to reach out and help these young guys get going.
So you must inherently believe that a lot of these companies that had been given an opportunity, whether it's funding or mentors or something, and didn't make it to the next level, they're still there might be a diamond in there.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's not everyone, right? I mean, some of these companies, they need to die. They really do.
Right.
But there are a few that actually, you know, you look at the product and you know there's a market there for it, and you look at the guys and they're great character guys and they can communicate and they can lead, right? And maybe they just need a little capital, right? Or maybe they're great guys who can lead and communicate and they can't build the product right. You know, there's, you know, a guy comes out of marketing at Coca-Cola. He doesn't necessarily know how to build an app.
Right.
Right. And so he goes and hires some contractors to build the app. Well, I'm here to tell you, contractors and building apps are kind of like contractors and building houses. They're not always great.
Right.
So sometimes the guy ends up with an app that's just dead in the water. And if you can hook them together with the right technology guy, maybe you can change that situation for him quickly.
So now, do you have any advice for that early stage business that maybe have gone through it? They thought that they thought they grabbed the brass ring. They realized, look, this isn't going to work for me, and now I'm going to contact Ignition Project. What?
It's all about perseverance, man. It's just like everything else in life. Just keep getting up every day, going and getting it, picking them up and putting them
right,
down.
Right, but so now they call you. So now right. What do they have to do to get your attention?
Pretty much talk. It's the easy part. No, I mean, what you find, you know, is the characteristics that are required to make a business successful. I mean, you guys know this as well as anybody. You got to sell something,
right,
first of all, right? So can the guy sell is the first
thing.
So
you're less interested
determine.
In people who have a napkin and an idea. They have to have some track record of some kind.
Yeah, and that's, you know, the napkin and the idea is really a pure startup. Right. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you got to be passionate about that idea and you got to be confident the guy in front of you can
right.
pull that off. Right. These guys a little bit farther down the road than that. Right. And so you can look at their scars and you can tell which ones you can heal and which ones you can't, quite
right.
honestly. Right.
So can you tell at a glance? What are you looking at?
A couple hours. Hey, I tell you, most people who live in Buckhead wonder why I hang out at Starbucks so much. This is why. This is exactly why. You see Eckstein at Starbucks. That's why. He's talking to one of these guys trying to figure out if he can help or not. Right.
Now, do you find or do you believe that there's a shortage of angel investors or money in Atlanta, or is that a little bit of a...
No, I think there's, you know, all you have to do in Atlanta to figure out if there's enough money or not is kind of stand on a bridge of 400 and watch how many, you know, high-end European cars go past. There's not a shortage of money, certainly not. There is a shortage of angel investors, and the angels, you know, quite honestly, what it takes to make an angel investors is not just money, but a good investment. Right. I mean, you have money, you want to invest it in the right thing. Right. Well, It's a free market when it comes to investment. I can send it to an investment manager, and he can put it in all kinds of places today, or I can put it in an angel investment, right? Well, you only do that if the angel investment looks like a better investment than giving it to the investment manager, right? So I don't think it's a shortage of money. I think it's a shortage of investment opportunities that appeal to the angel community or the folks that could be in the angel community here in Atlanta. And that actually, that the problem is people who don't know they could be angels may want to be angels, but they don't even know where to start with kind of what's the investment look like? What should I expect from a return? What's my risk? And sometimes those entrepreneurs, they didn't get the MBA, so they don't come out of school knowing how to present that investment to somebody, right? That's one of the things I help a lot of guys with, is how just to package it up and lay it in front of somebody and say, look, this is just as good as an investment or a better investment than 10 other things you might be looking at with this money, right?
Now, do you think that Atlanta is a kind of a disadvantage when it comes to angel investing because it's such a city that's so real estate oriented that people have that as in the back of their head?
It's amazing. In the 90s, the only people who were angel investors were those real estate guys doing really well from all that growth over the past 20 years, right? Today, it's much more diverse. We probably have, we got real estate guys, obviously. We got technology guys who have been successful, and technology's been pretty successful in this town for 20 years now or so. We also got guys coming out of, just kind of the baby boomer generation, higher up level executives at the large corporations we have here retiring and looking for some way to kind of stay involved in business and get back in. And one of the things that's interesting to them is, early stage companies. So there's plenty of fruit out there on the angel tree. It's just a matter of getting those folks interested in the investment, I think.
Now, are you seeing Atlanta having a robust enough talent center? Is our engine for talent good enough?
We have a ton of talent here. I mean, if you just read the press over the last 12 months, I think we've seen Ford, AT&T, and three or four other Fortune 500 brands decide that they're going to have a technology center built in Atlanta with 200 employees, right? Companies like that don't invest that kind of money if they don't think the talent's here. The talent is definitely here to build these types of companies. It's just a matter of finding the right people, putting them together, getting them a little capital and getting it down the road.
Well, we had that show this morning, Atlanta Mobility Radio, that we do on Tuesday mornings. And I get so inspired and encouraged every time we have that show because there's some really sharp, young people that you can just tell they are ready to set the world on fire. And they have some ideas and some ways to implement them that are going to have a genuine impact on the economy. So I get inspired every time we have that show. My question is this, though. I'm operating under the impression I don't need to wait till I'm David Cummings to participate as an investor in this movement. If I've made a comfortable living, I can still play too, right?
Absolutely. And I mean, there is a movement afoot probably 5-6 years old called crowdfunding, right? Where there are now websites on the internet. You can be part of what they call a syndicate.
Because I'm fired up. Right? I see these people come to the studio. I want to play. I mean, I want to be involved, right?
And I think it's not a matter of kind of how much money. It is a matter of how much risk you like. Okay, because I mean, none of this stuff is low risk. Let's put it that way, right? I mean, we're talking about 1/100th of a chance of you getting any of your money back. So everybody should be aware of that.
I'm gonna let Pete go on air.
Yeah, he'll tell you
live. So I'm not risk averse, Jim.
No, that's good.
I take no offense to that.
Pete looks like a good guy. I don't know
why
that would be a problem.
But the point is, seriously, I mean, if you've made a comfortable living, you have some disposable income, you have a little bit of a tolerance for risk, and then there's an opportunity to get involved.
I think there's an opportunity, and I think that's the key, right? I mean, you can give your money to an investment manager and have him send it to New York, and you can figure out what happens to that later. Or you can give a little money to an entrepreneur here in Atlanta that you believe in, right? And you can call him up every week and find out what's happening with that money. And actually, if you got any ability, you might actually be able to help him increase the value of that money, right? Which one sounds like a better idea to you?
Sounds incredibly rewarding to me, just going along.
Exactly.
All the way through the...
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's very enriching. Very enriching.
So now, your day-to-day life, now you've exited 4 times and you have this side project helping other people do their thing. What does your day-to-day life look like?
Usually starts with some meetings at Starbucks.
So you're just trolling entrepreneurs?
That's my business development part of the day, right?
Okay, that's what we're calling it.
But usually 2 to 3 2-hour meetings a day where I'm meeting with CEOs, with entrepreneurs, and I'm helping them work on their plan. The first question I always ask them, what's your 3 biggest problems today? right? And you get a guy across the table whose hair's on fire because he's running around with his customers, he's got his employees going on, he's got his banker calling him. You know, you ask what are the three biggest problems you have today,
right.
He never has a hard time answering that right. question, right? And if I can give him any value as far as answers to either of those three, you know, issues that he brings forward to, you know, he gets good stuff. He's got something to go do when he gets back to the office. He's got something to go think about. Maybe have, you know, a contact that I can go put him in touch with to go, you know, move the ball down the road a little bit more, right? And so I've had clients like this for 5 or 6 years now, and really, you know, what you find with them is sometimes just having them express and hear their own words as they're telling you the problems is actually the best way to get the problem solved. Mm-hmm. Because as an entrepreneur, mm-hmm. there aren't a lot of folks you can talk to that can totally relate to where you're at and what you're doing, right? You know, I used to do this when I was running my business. I come home, I tell my wife all these problems. She'd be like, yeah, honey, that sounds good. Anyway, can you change his diapers? Your trash needs out. Right. So, you know, you learn, you know, your lawyer, he doesn't want to hear you have any problems. Right. So, you know, who do you talk to? Right. And again, sometimes just having their own voice, you know, hear their own voice express the problem. They go, wait a minute, I know how to solve that problem. Why haven't I done this before? You know, but in the hecticness of the day, you know, they don't always get to it. They don't always hear it that way. Right.
But your intention, though, is you want to be a matchmaker with the entrepreneur to help match them with funds or whatever.
With funds, with any resources they may need.
And participate with them in some manner.
That's right. Generally, you know, if I can help bring – the easiest way to bring an investor in is if he has intellectual capital as well, mm-hmm. right? A guy who's in one industry investing in another is a very difficult thing. And it's a very difficult thing for both people to get comfortable with. But if I bring a product specialist into a consumer product company, he is motivated. He is excited. He wants to come help these guys every day. And so for him to be interested in investing in this company is a straightforward thing. Look, I'll give you a little cash. I'll come help you grow that cash. It's a pretty straightforward proposition when you find the right people. So, yeah, there is a matchmaker, you know, kind of component to it.
So patterns, some major do's or don'ts. If I'm going to get a chance to have a substantive conversation with a Jim Eckstein, some things like, Stone, whatever you do, don't do this, or make sure you do this that we could leave our listeners with.
Well, you know, advisors kind of, this is not good news. Advisors kind of have a bad name sometimes, right? Because there are people who like their names on your websites, and they, you know, sometimes it's all about blowing their image up and not necessarily helping your company, right? But good advisors, right, they want to know the real problems now. And this is, so what I would tell you is ask the hardest question first. Don't you know, walk around the bush a little bit. Just go right in and say, look, I'm short on cash flow. You know, 20 grand a month is going out the door. I got no way to replace it. I got 15 grand left in my bank account. If I don't get 20 grand a month between now and Tuesday, I'm not going to make payroll. I got an issue. How can you help, right? I mean, really, walk in the door and hit the guy. It, by the way, if the guy backs up, he's not an advisor. Okay?
Right.
If he leans in, he's an advisor.
Right. Well, some advisors, I mean, we've run into this, that they're out for their own, you know, some retainer or something.
Yeah, right,
they're,
they're
just looking at us like we're the cash cow.
That's right. Well, and they're going to, everybody's going to put in their time, so they want to get paid for it. We understand that, right? But, you know, again, the guy who leans in when you describe your problem to him, that's the guy who's going to be there for a while. He's going to help you out.
Right.
And you know, it's not that he doesn't need to get paid for his time. He probably does too. But at the same point in time, if he's leaning in and you don't have cash, he understands you can't pay him.
Right. And he's betting that it's a good enough idea
that
it's worth his time.
Let me hang out, see what I can do, right?
And he feels like he has some ideas that
can help.
Corrected. All right. Where can our listeners find out more? What's the best way?
Sure. Best way is to get me at Jim at the Angel Advisors or at XJAE on Twitter.
Fantastic. Well, thanks so much for coming by and visiting with us again, man.
Thanks for having me, guys. It's been awesome.
So stay with us, if you will. We are going to get a chance to visit to this other guy.
Absolutely. Sounds good. I'll be here.
Can you turn his mic off?
Pressure's on you, buddy.
Right? No, he's going to lean in and help you with all your
problems. You're trying to be this mysterious guy with the scarf. But
it's cold in here, by the way.
Yeah, all right.
Just turn the AC on for me.
Please join me in welcoming to the program with ATDC, Startup Catalyst, and Entrepreneur in Residence, Mr. Peter Santoro. Did you learn anything in that last segment, man?
It was great. I think, you know, the city of Atlanta, if there's nothing else that we've done, we have significantly grown programming and groups that are willing to, and individuals that are willing to help entrepreneurs where that never really existed before. So it's amazing. I mean, even the ATDC was very focused on just a select group of companies. And so I think in general, our market, our the individuals that are stepping forward, the programming that's stepping forward, it's pretty amazing to see grow.
So now that you're with the ATDC, why don't you share a little bit about your background that got you graduated back to school?
Yeah. I was a professional soccer player. I then started a software company in the sports industry. We did online registration and credit card processing for youth sport leagues. Ran that for 10 years. We sold that company to Dick's Sporting Goods. I started a sales technology company that I put through an accelerator at Georgia Tech called Flashpoint. And I thought it was going to be a software company. We came out, it looked more like a hardware and software company. That scared the hell out of me, and I stopped that company. And while I was working on maybe what the hardware would look like, I was at Georgia Tech. I was at ATDC a lot, and I became an entrepreneur in residence. And now I'm an entrepreneur in residence and a startup catalyst.
So you just gave yourself that title, or they give it to you if you're yeah, there for so more than six weeks
all,
in a row?
I think all the entrepreneurs in residence give themselves the titles. We're all entrepreneurs in residence are part-time employees at ATDC. And then catalysts, startup catalysts, community catalysts, manufacturing catalysts. We have a couple different kind. Are full-time employees. So I'm a full-time employee now that's still doing my part-time work as well. They just, they just want me doing double duty.
So now at ATDC, that's where you're spending your time, or you have another startup on the side?
No, right now just ATDC. That's it.
So now, if you're an entrepreneur, why should you get connected with ATDC?
Well, ATDC is first Advanced Technology Development Center. It's a government-funded incubator that's located at Georgia Tech.
So it's not actually Georgia country, Tech. Right?
It is the oldest.
Oldest.
Started in 1980. Huh. So it's the oldest in the country. It's a Forbes top 10 incubator. They release it every 2 years, so they upped it to a Forbes top 12 this past year. But when it comes to research-based and school-based incubators, we're always on the list. We commercialize research out of Georgia Tech, but again, ATDC is government funded. So our mission really is to work with the most transformative technology companies, which are high potential technology, life science, or deep IP related companies that are headquartered in the state of Georgia. So a lot of those are here in Atlanta, but we're in Augusta, we're in Savannah, we're in a number of the cities, Gwinnett and Alpharetta, doing circles. So we're everywhere, but our focus is on these. We have a heavy focus on kind of what we call select companies, these transformative companies. And then there's a large portion of our resources that goes to just general education and community outreach. So working with startups at every level, they don't get quite the resources that a select company does, but they get a lot of resources around access to individuals like Catalyst to talk to, access to education and programming. But our select companies kind of get a whole nother level of support, and that is kind of our four C's, which are coaching, customers, campus, and capital. And that's access to tech and internships. That's access to investors, VCs. That's access to EIRs who actually dedicate their time at ATDC all to the select companies. So they get a one-on-one kind of person to go to with any issues. And then the community, so the space, they have access to space at ATDC. Though it's not space dependent. You don't have to have an office space at ATDC in order to be a part of it.
We can meet at the table next to Jim's.
That's right. If we're at Starbucks, could definitely be an ATDC company. We only have a finite amount of space, so it wouldn't be representative if we just held it to that.
So, what does it take to get in the club? Like, what are the hurdles that I need to jump over, around, through to get in this environment?
Sure. So if you're a community member, you pay $25 per quarter. It's pretty simple.
I don't even have to have an idea. I just give you $25.
Basically, yeah.
What a great place to go get ideas.
Matter of fact, if you want to pass it across the table, you're in. I can't take it, though. I'll just look at it. And then. But no, community members, $25 a quarter gets you into kind of education, gets you access to Catalyst to talk to about your idea. The select company is a totally different process. So right now we have 35 select companies. That process really is you meet with an entrepreneur in residence, and they you have to go through two entrepreneurs in residence have to kind of green light you. They go through a scorecard process of about 15 to 20 criteria, and they're really looking for how big is this problem, how disruptive, or even though that word is overused, what type of is there real technology here? Are they really disrupting an industry? Is it something we think could change the whole dynamic? Do they have deep IP? Is it something coming out of Georgia Tech or another research institute? But how big is that problem? And do they have any unique insight to it? Can they give us one specific unique insight related to that problem that they think they can go after? If they can do that and they can put a team behind it, then we're willing to support them.
All right, but for a nominal investment, an organization like ours can go hang out with these cool, smart people. We may have a contribution to make. I mean, there's probably some things that we could do for up-and-coming companies. We might decide there's somebody to match up with, and we add to our media portfolio as we try to work higher up the food chain. So but we can go hang out with these folks and tap all this potential, right?
We've got community events.
This is great, right?
You guys don't even need to pay the $25 to be a part of the community events. You just go to the community events. But I think there's the $25 is really, it's really about the community member, that individual member is really about an entrepreneur who's trying to figure out how to get his idea up and off the ground.
Right.
Our select companies are companies that most of them are funded. They're like going. They're real deal.
Right.
They're but our community companies are like, hey, I've got an idea. You know, what the hell do I do? Like, what's the next step? How do I do this thing? What's going to kill me? What should I be worried about? And so we have a curriculum that Jen Bonet and company, the people before me, have really put in place. It's amazing program in that it maps every step. I mean, it maps the customer discovery, the early process. It maps the financial business model. It maps the whole business model. It maps the angel investment and investment scenarios. It brings the angels involved. And this is all for community members. So it's a ton of resources available that you don't have to, you know, be commercializing the next wafer technology out of Georgia Tech.
Both of you guys must sleep incredibly well at night. I mean, this has to be very rewarding work, both of you.
I have four sons.
Oh, well,
so
yeah.
He doesn't.
I mean, other than that, yeah.
But you understand the meaning, the spirit of what I'm trying to say. It's got to feel great to do this with your time, with your life.
Yeah, I love it. How about you?
Why do you think it's so rewarding?
Just because of what you can see come to life, and you just watch it grow like a shrub to a tree, and know that you've had a part in that. That's got to feel great.
I don't know that I think of it that way, or that I sleep that great, to tell you the truth.
Okay.
Besides having a 7-month-old baby, I see a lot of failure. A lot of failure. I see a lot of guys that.
Okay.
That are contractors, that are consultants, that are, you know, some other related business, and they come in and they try and start a new technology company, and they fail because, you know what, this is hard as hell. Like, being an entrepreneur, it's got all the panache and sex appeal that that everyone's laid on top of it, but you're trying to create economic value where not everyone always wants you to succeed. And you have to work your tail off to make that happen. And so we have this constant process of, yeah, there's some cool, sexy, fun startups that are coming in, and everyone wants to be a part of those. But we have lots of companies that come in, and you know, there's just no rocket fuel in their jets. You know, and they're trying, they're pedaling, but you know, gravity weighs a lot more than what they can pedal against. And so, you know, it's our job to try and to hack this process of one out of ten startups succeeding. On average, to hack that process and somehow make it two or three startups, it's still meaning seven we need to kill off. That's still a lot of people that are coming before you with businesses that are going to die. But everyone there is so invested, believes so much in what they're doing and how they're doing it, that we believe that we can kind of uptick that from one to three, one to three. And that's why I think what Ed's doing is it just adds that and makes it powerful.
Yeah, I think what you got to remember is those nine that die, and I actually think it's more than that, but those nine that die, right, that's the guy's passion. That's not just like right. some harebrained idea he walked in the door with one day, right? This is who the guy believes he is. It's his purpose to go make this thing execute, right? And to be the guy who sits across the table from him, or they bring a group of people that sit across the table from him and go, guy, there's just not anybody to buy this, or guy, there's just not anybody to fund this, right? So every day is not really exciting. You know, every day, actually, this is one of the reasons I do these meetings in Starbucks is so, you know, when you have to tell the guy across the table, I can't help you, it can be a civilized handshake and a walk away, right? Because when you do these meetings private, sometimes it doesn't always end civilized, right? And that's hard, right? But I mean, it's really hard. I mean, you got something you know and you love, and the guy walks up to you and says, man, I just don't think this is going to work. By the way, it's just our opinion. It's just the evaluation process. We know right. We're not brilliant. The guy could still go pull this off, and a lot of people...
Speak for yourself.
A lot of people take that as motivation to go figure out how just to prove us wrong, right? Some of the best companies have been proving other people wrong. But it can be difficult sometimes. I totally agree with Peter.
Well, I mean, to your point where such few make it all the way, but I mean, in the eyes of an incubator or even angel investor, for them, all the way is a huge return. But for a lot of entrepreneurs, you know, if they can have a company that makes $100,000, a couple hundred grand, that could be a huge victory for them, where it would be a failure for, you know, some of the angel investors.
Yeah, I mean, it all, you know, angel investor is a broad term. You know, you... Technically, if you invested $100, you could probably be an angel investor. The official term of angel investor is whether or not you're a accredited investor, but of course that's getting blown up. So lifestyle businesses are good, and I think that the term incubator is also a broad term. So there's plenty of incubators that probably support lifestyle businesses. The ATDC, we're going for high potential technology companies. That's written life science. That's really what we're going after. Our verticals are kind of fintech, healthcare, IT, sales and marketing automation, device and sensors. So yeah, we're going for kind of big plays in that category. But we're going for big plays not because we get any economic return, other than creating economic development for the community.
Right.
And so we want jobs. We want
right. companies.
And
those are all clusters that we already have here in town.
That's right. We stick with what we can be successful with.
But yeah. There's a lot of, you know, just to kind of add to that, there's a lot of companies that don't go public for $1 billion that are still pretty good angel investments. Right?
Absolutely.
I mean, a lot of companies take $1 million or $2 million that are selling 3, 4, 5 years down the road for $30-50 million. A lot of those investors are making a really nice return, right? And so, you know, one of the interesting things about the job is to coach the entrepreneurs on where they're going to end up in that
spectrum.
Right,
you got to manage their expectations.
Right? Because sometimes the investor wants the quickest exit. He wants liquidity in his investment, right? A lot of times the entrepreneur is thinking, like, I'm going to run this baby for the next 20 years of my life, right?
Right.
Disconnect could be a problem down the road,
right?
So we have to align those kind of things too when we're building these kind of companies. Make sure everybody's kind of on the same page of how that works.
So now, Jim, for you, when you see a company has come out of an incubator, does that give you more confidence that they had gone through that process, or how do you feel about that?
You know, most of the companies that I get out of incubators got kicked out of the incubator, unfortunately. So, and that's because I'm here to help guys, right? I mean, I'm looking for guys who need help, right?
Right.
Companies that come out of incubators and are successful, they usually got a team of people around them already that are going to make them work. These incubators, they work. I mean, and I'm glad we need more. That's how I think about those things. But there are guys who come out of those incubators, and I'm sure Peter will tell you, there's guys who have been down at ATTC, 18, 24 months, and eventually they're just kind of like, don't got much for you, right? Or can't do much more for you,
right?
And it's those guys that every once in a while you can find a diamond in that rough right there, right? So...
Well, I mean, I think it's fantastic that we have both and these other kinds of organizations in the ecosystem to serve. What kind of attention, if any, are we placing and should we be placing on, once we get folks developed to a certain point, trying to keep them here and not let them go to Silicon Valley or Boston? Or
what is keep them here meaning?
Georgia.
But just... That they're physically located here?
Well, that the money and the company. What I've heard in just doing interviews is the only place I've gotten this. I don't have any other knowledge beyond that. Just this idea that some of the best talent we develop goes off to Boston, Silicon Valley. Is that a myth or is there?
I say go. We have to develop our own community. We can't place restrictions. We're designed to create entrepreneurs. That's what we're trying to do. We need to be successful at that first. And that means building successful company. If you need to go out, raise money outside of the state, go raise money outside of the state. Matter of fact, if you're going to raise money, chances are you're going to have to go outside of the state. So you might as well get comfortable with that. Second, if you're going to get bought from someone outside of the state, get bought by someone from out of state. Like, be a successful entrepreneur. Once we've reached a mass of successful entrepreneurship, then I believe that will start to turn on itself. We'll have more and more David Cummings. We'll have more and more guys here where the money will start to come from here. Well, the opportunities will come here. One great thing that I'm seeing is entrepreneurs going into the enterprise. That's something we sorely lack in Atlanta. Most of our enterprise is enterprise people. They're corporate people, and so the ability to work with startups is a very foreign process. And even now, as the enterprises start to come in, it's around innovation. They don't necessarily get exactly what's going on. They just know that, hey, we're looking for some new innovative ways. What you see in a number of other places where entrepreneurs have just been successful is that the company, they're then working in the companies in that town, and so they're then reaching back into the startup to either work or buy talent or buy the company. And so what I think is going to happen is, listen, we need to focus on success first. Let's get success first. Let's have entrepreneurs be successful wherever they can be successful, and then start to turn that money back into the Atlanta community. Then I would love to just say, yeah, entrepreneurs stay here in Atlanta. That's not how entrepreneurship works. Entrepreneurship works by, hey, where is the money? Who's going to pay me? How is this going to be? What does this look like? And so, focus on that. Be successful there. Then we'll start to roll it back in. And then you'll start to roll into enterprise. As companies start to buy you, buy divisions, you'll start to roll into enterprise. And then you can start to reach back in the startup community. And I think that's the dynamic that we're trying to foster. But it takes time. It's going to be good. We're going to be really good at it. But it's just taking time.
That just points out, let me just add to that. That just points out there's a gaps in the ecosystem that we have today, right? People are leaving, I think, for one of two reasons. One, they need capital, or two, they need clients, right? You got to go to where your clients are, otherwise you got nothing to sell, right? If there's not capital here, you got to leave. And especially after early capital, the capital in the middle, there's not enough of that here to solve this kind of problem. So I totally agree with Peter. You got to have those investors that you're going out and finding in Boston and the Valley and Austin and places like that decide that, hey, these guys came from Atlanta. I wonder if there's anybody else like that over there.
Right.
And come here and find out what's going on, right? And by the way, when they come here and their brand comes with them, the people in Atlanta who have capital, we'll look at that and go,
hey,
wow,
what are we missing?
How come these guys are here investing and I'm not? What's
competition?
Up with that,
right? Exactly. I mean, competition drives the next stage of funds, Matt. Angels here have always had the benefit of just not doing anything. Just look at deals. I look at the next deal. I just wait. Just wait it out until I get the best terms. It was in their best interest. And now, as even VCs start to reach back in, then you're seeing this competition for deals, and I don't want to you know, push this too much. We still have a lot of work to do. We have a lot of work to do in this stage. But when you start to get these emails from large VCs out west, when you start to see them invest in our companies, you know, like Andreessen Horowitz investing in our company, saying that Atlanta is this great startup place. In one of his talks, just no one asked him. He just put it out there because of some of the investments he's made here in town. That kind of thing is showing that what we're doing is working. You know, we constantly get the comment that our companies are always more focused on revenue than other companies, which they like. It's not always the best thing for a startup, but they know that our companies are going to be hyper focused on that because that's how money is. That's how capital is raised here in Atlanta. So I think we're doing a lot of the things that we need to be doing. But you know, my big call is for enterprise. You know, to realize what you have in your backyard, not necessarily go out of your way, just start to open the door to organizations that could potentially bring you new ways to innovate or new innovations or new ways to solve problems. So corporations are really good at internal crowdsourcing. They're terrible at external crowdsourcing. They're terrible at external innovation. And so their idea of kind of innovating is sourcing the problem around their organizations and figuring out. And they have a lot of great people to do that, but there's a lot of opportunity that lays just outside of their walls that can bring innovation in. And all I'm saying is, hey, keep an eye out, reach out to some of our groups, get involved, and just get a test, get a taste of what's out there.
Now, when you're saying enterprise, you mean like the Home Depots, Coca-Cola's, the larger organizations that aren't necessarily technology startup companies.
Sure, and most of those are already in. So if you go down kind of the top organizations, they're already in. Mm-hmm. I'm not really even talking about those guys. I'm really talking about maybe the next tier of companies below that who have as many problems as those guys do, but maybe haven't figured out how to get outside of their own walls. Obviously the large corporations have this issue, but I'd say they're all, I mean, if you look at the innovation centers that are being put at Tech Square, there's quite a laundry list. Panasonic, AT&T, Home Depot, we've got two, maybe three announcements starting at the beginning of next year for some additional really big ones. ThyssenKrupp, I know I'm forgetting a couple that are down there, but these guys are putting their innovation center there for a reason. A lot of it has to do with HR. A lot of it has to do with just talent acquisition. You know, they want new talent. They want Georgia Tech talent. But a lot of it does have to do with process, system innovation, new product innovation.
Well, it has been an absolute delight having you in the studio with us. I knew it was going to be fun because we had both these gentlemen in before. Before we go, let's make sure that our listeners have coordinates for ATDC.
Yes. Advanced Technology Development Center, atdc.org.
All right. And one more time, Jim, what's the best way for folks to reach out?
Jim at the Angel Advisors. Real easy.
All right, easy enough. Well, thank you again, gentlemen. This has been fun. We got to do this more frequently.
All right, let's do it.
All right,
glad to come back.
All right, until next time. This is Stone Payton for Lee Cantor, our guest this afternoon, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you next time on Startopia.